Hi everyone, you're back on with Listening to L Boogie. Yesterday I made an episode number 3 for my 4th season. I published it and I wasn't satisfied with the audio quality. So I went out and got a professional microphone in order to give you guys better audio quality. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to redo yesterday's episode. And yesterday's episode included Ahmaud Arbery's parents outraged over attempting plea deal pushed by Biden's Department of Justice. Former NFL coach Brian Flores, if I'm not mistaken, is suing the NFL and 3 other teams for discrimination. And Russia amasses 100,000 troops at the Ukraine border. So I'm going to give you guys a better episode of yesterday's episode, actually. And henceforward, you guys will have a better quality of a program or content from me. So after this short break, I'm going to come back and I'm going to go through what I went through yesterday in yesterday's episode. See you guys in a minute. Peace. Hi, everyone. You're back on with Listening to L Boogie. And I'm going to give you the first story of yesterday's episode, which I am redoing, concerning Ahmaud Arbery's parents being upset about the Department of Justice trying to strike a plea deal with the McMichaels. The parents of Ahmaud Arbery have accused the Department of Justice of breaking their trust by making an unauthorized backroom plea deal with 2 other men who murdered their son. A jury in November found 3 white men, Gregory McMichael, his son Travis McMichael, and their neighbor William Roddy Bryan, guilty of Arbery's murder. They were sentenced to life in prison earlier this month. All 3 men were due to stand trial in February on hate crime charges, accused of violating Arbery's civil rights and targeting him because he was black. But prosecutors filed notice in the U.S. District Court of Brunswick, Georgia, on Sunday, asking a judge to approve plea agreements for the McMichaels. Specific details about the deal were not provided in the court filings, and they do not name Brian. In a statement issued through their attorneys, Arbery's parents, Wanda Cooper Jones and Marcus Arbery, said they were vehemently against the plea deal and had expressed their opposition on calls with the Department of Justice officials on Sunday. I'm going to give you guys some more information about this case. And give me a little bit of time. I'm going to pull it up. Because the judge presiding over the case rejected the plea deal from the guys. Okay. Just a moment. All right. This is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. A federal judge on Monday rejected a plea agreement for the man found guilty of murdering Ahmaud Arbery just 1 week before he is to stand trial for federal hate crimes. Okay. Okay. I had to switch because they want you to join. So I'm at another source. Judge rejects plea deal for man who killed Ahmaud Arbery. A federal judge rejected a plea agreement Monday that would have averted a hate crimes trial for the man convicted of murdering Ahmaud Arbery. Okay, this is from Brunswick, Georgia. Federal judge rejected a plea agreement Monday that would have averted a hate crime trial for the man convicted of murdering Ahmaud Arbery. Arbery's parents denounced the proposed deal for Travis McMichael, with mother Wanda Cooper Jones and father Marcus Arbery emotionally asking the judge to reject agreements filed for McMichael and his father Greg McMichael. Okay. In rejecting the deal, the U.S. District Court Judge Lisa Godby Wood said it would have locked her into a specific terms, including 30 years in federal prison at sentencing. Wood said that in this case, it would only be appropriate to consider the family's wishes at sentencing, which the proposed deal wouldn't allow. Travis and his lawyer asked for a 10-minute break to discuss whether he moves ahead with pleading guilty. The judge had yet to rule on his father's proposed deal. Marcus Arbery told reporters outside the federal courthouse in Brunswick that he's mad as hell over the deal, which lawyer Lee Merritt said could enable Travis and Greg McMichael to spend the first 30 years of their life sentence in federal prison rather than state prison where conditions are tougher. Ahmaud is a kid you cannot replace, Arbery said. He was killed racially, and we want 100% justice, not no half justice. Cooper Jones described the U.S. Justice Department's decision to propose the plea deal despite her objections as disrespectful. I fought so hard to get these guys in the state prison, she said. I told them very, very adamantly that I wanted them to go to state prison and do their time. Then I got up this morning and found out they had accepted this ridiculous plea. Okay. Woods continued preparations to summoning the first 50 potential jurors to the courthouse on February 7th for questioning. The proposed plea agreement were filed with the court late Sunday. There was no mention of a deal which their co-defendant, William Roddy Bryant, okay? No details were disclosed in court Monday morning. Federal prosecutors didn't mention the deal in the court's morning session. Federal deals would not affect state murder convictions in Arbery's killing. All three men were sentenced to life in prison on January the 7th after a trial last fall. The hate crime charges accused McMichaels and Bryant of violating the 25-year-old black man's civil rights by chasing him through their neighborhood in coastal Georgia on February 23, 2020. The McMichaels armed themselves and pursued Arbery in one pickup truck while Bryant joined the chase in another and recorded video of Travis McMichael blasting Arbery with a shotgun. A national outcry erupted when the graphic video leaked online 2 months later. Georgia was one of the just four U.S. states without hate crimes laws at the time. Legislatures quickly approved one, but it came too late for the state hate crime charges in Arbery's killing. During the state trial in Gwinn County Superior Court, the defense argued that the white men had authority to chase Arbery because they reasonably suspected he had been committing crimes in their neighborhood. Travis McMichael testified he opened fire only after Arbery attacked him with fists and tried to grab his shotgun. The federal court ordered that a jury pool be chosen from throughout the Southern District of Georgia, which covers 43 counties, to improve odds of seating a fair and impartial jury. Okay. So basically what happened was Biden's Department of Justice tried to strike a plea deal for the McMichaels so they can pull the first 30 years of their life sentence without the possibility of parole in cushy federal prison, where each inmate receives probably $10,000 or $15,000 more, and the food is better and the conditions are better, and they protect former cops better. So they tried to go behind Ahmaud Arbery's parents and try to, in the middle of the night, to try to pull it off, and also lied to the judge, saying that, I'll say allegedly lied to the judge, saying that the McMichaels approved of the plea, which came out that they didn't approve of it. So if Arbery's parents didn't approve of the plea for the McMichaels by the Department of Justice, that means that they lied to the judge when they said that that they were in contact with Arbery's parents and they approved of the plea deal. So it is what it is. Okay, once we return from this short break, we're going to cover our second bit of news about Brian Flores, who is suing the NFL, which he should, about that bullshit. And we're going to cover this story after this brief break. See y'all in a minute. Peace. Hi, everyone. You're back on We're Listening to L Boogie. And now we're going to cover a story concerning former Miami Dolphins coach Brian Flores filing suit against the NFL, the Miami Dolphins, the Denver Broncos, and the New York Giants. Wow. Okay. Brian Flores discusses NFL lawsuit, calls legal action bigger than himself. We're at a fork in the road. This is by CBS. Excuse me. Former NFL Dolphins head coach Brian Flores is suing the NFL, the Dolphins, the New York Giants, and the Denver Broncos, alleging racial discrimination. The lawsuit claims that Flores went through multiple sham head coaching interviews and was treated unfairly by the Dolphins during his three seasons in Miami. On Wednesday morning, Flores and his legal counsel joined CBS Morning to discuss the lawsuit. One of the occurrences that pushed Flores to file the suit had to do with his former boss and current New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. 3 days before Flores was set to officially interview with the Giants for their head coaching position, Belichick accidentally texted Flores congratulating him on winning the job. Belichick thought he was texting Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, who ended up getting the position. Basically, Flores was accidentally told before he had been interviewed for his dream job that he would not be in consideration. It was a range of emotions, Flores said, about his realization, humiliation, disbelief, anger. I worked so hard to get to where I am in football to become a head coach. Put 18 years in the league and to go on what was a sham interview, I was hurt. Okay. The lawsuit is not just about Flores being disrespected, as the 58-page file brings up several other instances of black coaching candidates being treated unfairly. Established in 2003, the Rooney Rule requires teams looking for a new head coach to interview minority candidates. Flores felt as though teams were just checking boxes by interviewing some black head coaches. Rooney Rule is intended to give minorities an opportunity to sit down in front of ownership, Flores said. But I think what it turned into is an instance where guys are just checking the box. And that's been the case. I've been on some interviews in the past where I've had that feeling. There's always no way to know for sure. And I know I am not alone in that. Flores, who is still a candidate for an open head coaching job, said that this lawsuit is much bigger than coaching. He said he wrestled with the decision to file the suit, but realizes he has an opportunity to make change. I understand the risk, and yes, it was a difficult decision, and I went back and forth, Flores said. And like I said, I love coaching. I do. It's something that I'm passionate about. It brings me joy, and I love helping young people reach their potential and become the best versions of themselves. I'm gifted to do that, but this is bigger than that. We're at a fork in the road now. We're either going to keep it the way it is, or we're going to go in another direction and actually make some real change. All right. And that's the end of that. There has to be some change, because it makes no sense for the NFL to maintain being 70% black when it comes to players for decades. But when you look at the NFL, when you look at coaching in the NFL, GMs and ownership, it doesn't represent the makeup of the NFL. It really doesn't. There should be more black men coaches, coaching and GMs and owners, for the simple fact that, you know, African-American players make up the majority of the league, and they've made the league what it is today, not discounting the contributions of more white football players in the beginning of stages of the NFL. But as time went on, you know, black players coming out of college have dominated the draft and dominate the makeup of the NFL. So that, you know, leadership in the NFL should reflect that. It should reflect the makeup of the league, and it doesn't, and it has to change. Okay, well, if we return from this short break, we're going to go over Vladimir Putin's decision to amass 100,000 troops at the Ukraine border. This is about to go down. See y'all guys in the second piece. Hello, everyone. You're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to cover our final bit of news in this episode that I'm redoing for better audio quality. And it concerns Russia amassing a bunch of troops. They estimated 175,000 at the Ukraine border. Here we go. This one is by the Washington Post. Russia planning massive military offense against Ukraine involving 175,000 troops, U.S. intelligence warns. Tensions mount between Washington and Moscow over a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine. U.S. intelligence has found the Kremlin is planning a multi-front offensive as soon as early next year, which is this year, involving up to 175,000 troops, according to a U.S. officials and intelligence document obtained by the Washington Post. The Kremlin has been moving troops toward the border with Ukraine while demanding Washington guarantee that Ukraine will not join NATO, that the alliance will refrain from certain military activities in and around Ukrainian territory. The crisis has provoked fears of a renewed war on European soil and comes ahead of a planned virtual meeting next week, which is this week, between President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Russian plans call for a military offensive against Ukraine as soon as early as this year, with a scale of forces twice what we saw this past spring during Russia's snap exercise near Ukraine border, said an administration official speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive information. The plans involve extensive movements of 100 battalion tactical groups with an estimated 175,000 personnel, along with armor, artillery, and equipment. The unclassified U.S. intelligence document obtained by the Post, which includes satellite photos, show Russian forces massing in four locations. Currently, 50 battlefield tactical groups are deployed, along with newly arrived tanks, artillery, according to the document. While Ukrainian assessments have said Russia has approximately 94,000 troops near the border, the U.S. map puts the number at 70,000, but it predicts the buildup to as many as 175,000 and describes extensive movement of battalion tactical groups to and from the border to obfuscate, whatever that means, intentions, and to create uncertainty. The U.S. analysis of Russia's plans is based on, in part, on satellite images that show newly arrived units at various locations along the Ukrainian border over the last month, the official said. Details of the U.S. intelligence provide a picture of the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken began to outline this week on a trip to Europe, where he described evidence that Russia has made plans for significant aggressive moves against Ukraine and warned there would be severe consequences, including high-impact economic measures, if Russia invaded. Biden said he is preparing measures to raise the cost of any new invasion for Putin, who has discussed the U.S. warnings as rumors and Russia is not threatening anyone. Okay, whatever you say. What I am doing is putting together, it's funny, what I believe to be will be the most comprehensive and meaningful set of initiatives to make it very, very difficult for Putin to go ahead and do what people are worried he may do, Brian said Friday, which was last Friday. Okay. The Russian military moves comes as Moscow has raised eyebrows in Washington with a sudden mobilization of reservists this year and a dramatic escalation of its rhetoric regarding Ukraine. Russian officials have defended the reserve mobilization as a necessary measure to help modernize the Russian army forces, but the administration officials raised concerns about the sudden and rapid program to establish a ready reserve of contract reservists, which the officials said is expected to add an additional 100,000 troops to the approximately 70,000 deployed now. The intelligence about a potential surge in forces bolsters a warning earlier this week from Blinken that Putin could quickly order an invasion of Ukraine and helps explain why Biden administration officials have been sounding the alarm about the threat of imminent invasion for weeks. We don't know whether President Putin has made the decision to invade, we do know that he is putting in place the capacity to do so on short order should he so decide. Blinken told reporters in Europe a day before meeting Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. We must prepare for all contingencies. Lavrov, in public comments this week, echoed Putin's warning about U.S. military equipment and activity encroaching on Russia's borders and said, "The nightmare scenario of military confrontation is returning." The intelligence documents also suggest that Russian forces may be leaving equipment behind at training facilities to allow an attack on Ukraine to commence quickly. Equipment may be left behind at different training ranges to enable a rapid final buildup, the document adds. Separately, a Ukrainian government official said the Russian military exercises conducted earlier this year near Ukraine borders helped Russian forces essentially rehearse the invasion. Of course, because that's what they do. I mean, you practice. I was in the army. That's what you do. The Russian troops worked out the issue of creating strike groups near the border of our state. Mobilization measures, logistical support of groups, transfer of significant military contingents, including by air, from Russia to the border with Ukraine, the official said, speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive analysis. While laying the groundwork for an invasion, Russian government has also been waging a propaganda campaign, the U.S. administration official said. Additionally, in the past month, our information indicates Russian influence proxies and media outlets have started to increase content denigrating Ukraine and NATO, in part to put the blame for a potential Russian military escalation on Ukraine, the official said. Recent information also indicates the Russian officials propose adjusting Russians' information operations against Ukraine to emphasize the narrative that Ukrainian leaders had been installed by the West, harboring a hatred for the Russian world, and were acting against the interests of the Ukrainian people. In his comments to Latvia, Blinken cautioned the Ukrainians not to give Russia a pretext for military action. We're also urging Ukraine to continue to exercise restraint because, again, the Russian playbook is to claim provocation for something that they were planning to do the whole time, he said. Putin has demanded the United States and its allies provide signed assurances excluding any expansion of NATO to include Ukraine and Georgia and limiting military activity near Russia's borders, most notably in and around Ukraine. A demand for a new European security pact comes after Putin has suggested for months that the U.S. and allied military activities in Ukraine and near Russia's borders are crossing a red line for the Kremlin. Excuse me. Russia needs precise legal judicial guarantee because our Western colleagues have failed to deliver on verbal commitments they made, Putin said in a speech at the Kremlin this week, suggesting the start of unsubstantive talks on this topic. Putin has long rallied against NATO expansion into former Warsaw Pact states as a disrespectful encroachment on Moscow. He said a concrete agreement must rule out any further eastward expansion of NATO and the deployment of weapon systems posing a threat to us in close proximity to Russia's territory. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki rejected out of hand the idea that Washington would provide a guarantee that Ukraine will not enter NATO. NATO member countries decide who is a member of NATO, not Russia, Psaki told reporters during a White House briefing Friday. This is how the process has always worked and how it will proceed. I think it's important to remember where the provocative action is coming from. It's not the United States. It's not Ukraine. U.S. and Ukrainian officials and military analysts believe Russia would mount a far larger scale invasion now than it did in 2014 when the country annexed Crimea and fueled a separatist uprising in Ukraine's east. The plan, the officials and analysts believe, could be to force Ukrainian troops to fight on multiple fronts, seeking not so much territory, but rather a compulsion by Kyiv and its Western backers that results in the security guarantees Putin wants, which is they don't want NATO coming east. Military analysts have compared the strategy to Moscow's 2008 invasion of Georgia. In comments this week, Putin said drills with U.S. nuclear-capable strategic bombers flying over the Black Sea poses a threat to Moscow, along with U.S. missile defense systems in Poland and Romania. He also expressed concern about NATO deploying missiles on Ukrainian territory that could have a flight time of 7 to 10 minutes to Moscow, though no such plans have been announced. Well, damn. He just, I don't know, you know, it's always some stuff going on behind the scenes, always a larger purpose. Putin, in my observation, he feels that if Ukraine joins NATO, then maybe other states, formerly of Russia or present to Russia, would want to join NATO also. And if this happens, eventually it won't be any Russia. So I'm assuming he's trying to save Russia from being annexed basically by NATO. Maybe that's what's going on in his mind. Why is it a big deal to the U.S.? I'm not quite sure of that, because there's always a lot of other underlying issues going on with that. But on the surface, they're saying that if the Ukraine wants to join NATO, they should be able to. And on the surface, they right. You know, if they don't want to, they want to leave Russia and join the NATO, then, you know, maybe that's their choice, you know. But it seems like to me, Vladimir Putin, he's trying to hold Russia together, because he feels that if they keep coming eastward, because he wants them to sign an agreement saying that they won't keep coming eastward towards the Kremlin. So basically, maybe he's just trying to save his country. But I don't know Russia's economic condition at the moment. They have caught hell in the past. You know, that's why Russia damn near broke apart, because all the, all the economic struggles of their people in past decades. So if sanctions come against them again, which the purpose of sanctions to me is to put the people under duress to change their government, then it's going to be an issue inside Russia as well. Well, that's my take on it. This is L Boogie. Thank you for listening to this revised and redone version of February 2nd's Hot Topics. I didn't like the audio of the first version. I unpublished it, so you guys may have been able to listen to it, but you may not have been able to listen to it. But this is the version that I want to give you guys to listen to. It's a much better audio quality, and going forward, that will be the case. But again, I'll talk to you guys again once or the next time God leaves his footprints in the sky. And again, like I always say, y'all be good to each other. Love each other if you can. And I know it's hard. I'll holler at y'all again on the next episode of Listen to L Boogie. Peace.